Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Canvas Shop Podcast. This is episode 12, and I'm really grateful to be here because the bulk of the production is over, so it's time to have a party. Not really. The work is endless, but I really enjoyed creating this one, doing this interview. I'm interviewing Fidel Rodriguez. He's a Venezuelan-born artist and gallerist living in Chicago now, and did a lot of work in New York City. Classically trained artist. His work is really top-notch, and I like it a lot. And I enjoyed our conversation a lot, and I think you guys will too. So, with that out of the way, I have to put the obligatory please like and subscribe in here. It really helps me out, and if you're listening to the audio version, subscribe if you can't like, and if you're really feeling generous, switch on over to YouTube and give me a sub over there. That would be fantastic. So, let's get right into it. Here with Fidel Rodriguez, artist, gallerist, and what was the other one? Numerologist?
No.
No? Not going to call yourself that?
Yeah, numerology enthusiast. Oh, shit, wait.
We have to do this.
Turn the doorbell off.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can handle it out there.
Okay.
Because I know that's a theme in all your work.
Yeah, I'm into it. I can't properly call myself. I'm a numerologist because just the fact that I know a lot about it doesn't mean that I'm the person that you should come to learn about numerology. You know, you gotta keep your facts straight. So I'm not gonna lie to myself. I'm into numbers, Kabbalah. You know, mm-hmm. all kind of like you know disciplines that can help us navigate our present into the future. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. When did you get into that?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I was always into it. So I, dude, the funny, you know what's the funny part? I even gonna forget that we're in a formal like talk, but it's funny because I hear a lot of people saying, oh, I decided to be an artist. I decided to do this. I decided to do that. And the common thread in many different artists that I know is that we never decided.
Yeah.
Life did it for us. You know, there's some people that say, I'm going to be an artist. And I'm like, wait, there's no other thing I can do better than this. You know? So it just picked you. It's an organic thing. It's something happens naturally. So you don't see, you know, it happens seamlessly. So you just keep doing what you're doing and, you know, and then you realize at a point that you look retrospectively, I'm like, okay, I was always an artist. I just didn't think about it.
Yeah. Well, I get it. I don't like to call myself an artist too much other than to just like describe what I do because I feel like creative just fits that a lot better. It's like, it doesn't really matter what I'm doing as long as I'm being creative, whether it's a podcast or recording video and editing it and all that.
That's the first thing you gotta be.
Yeah. But let's talk about a little bit of your like biography first.
Well, I was born in Venezuela, you know, and came to the U.S. in 1996. At the age of 17, I was already exhibiting at a show sponsored by the government, by the Venezuelan government, in La Guaira, where I'm from. And subsequently, I got picked up by a gallery called Arts Forum, which is Frida Pliedman, was my art dealer. I was 17 years old. I know.
Yeah, that's a good start, you know.
I got stuck always. I'm a people's person, so I was always interested in what people got to say, and especially older people. I wasn't into what my friends got to say. Mm-hmm. I was more into like what everybody else older than me had to say. And so that's how everything started, you know. Before I got into a gallery, I was already working as an artist full time and going to school. But the influence came from other artists that were older. I mean, my mom's age. Mm-hmm. And that I assisted, and I wanted to work for free for them and assist them and you know, get the inside scoop of not only how to work as an artist, but how properly become an artist and know what everything is about.
Yeah.
Yeah, little by little, going from one gallery to another one, I always be in the back office talking to the gallery owners, finding out what they think, what they look at, why would they pick a certain artist and not others, you know?
Yeah, it's important, getting to know people personally.
Yeah.
How much of an impact, because you went to art school.
Yeah.
Did you graduate?
No.
No?
Mm-mm. I studied graphic design.
Okay.
And as I was studying graphic design, one of my teachers said, Fidel, why don't you just study art? And I'm like, I want to study painting. So what happened, this is exactly what happened. This is the reason why I didn't. As you know, I'm Venezuelan. Back in the day when I was in art school, Venezuela was going through turmoil, but it was still the golden years. Everything, there was money, you could go to school. I mean, in my case, it was a little, you know, precarious because my parents were divorced, so it was difficult for me to actually, I didn't have like a, let me go to study art, and I had everything. Deprecation was crazy. I had no money, you know, and I wanted to be an artist, and there's things that you gotta sacrifice. But, you know, in Venezuela, you know, I went to three different schools, and the last one I went to, actually, it was sponsored and subsidized by UNESCO, the United Nations Educational Program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the teachers, they used to bring teachers from all over the world and do seminars and everything, and like, you know, different subjects. It was beautiful school. But as you all know, you know, socialism was coming, was on the way. And I had the opportunity to work as a set designer. I had a job. I got hired by an Italian corporation in Italy to work in the Dominican Republic as a set designer. Paid in US dollars. And they were hiring me because I was really fast. Meaning like, this guy really, really paints fast. And, you know, he's efficient. So doing the math, I'm like, well, political situation in Venezuela is crazy. What do you want to do? You want to be like in Cuba, driving a cab, and then you are a surgeon? You want to be an architect, you know, working as a waiter for the rest of your life? That's what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, nobody agreed with me, but I never went back. I said, like, sorry. And, you know, the rest is history. You know, I worked for different corporations that needed set designs, and little by little, you know, I met, you know, people that were in the field, in the art field, and I continued what I was doing overseas.
Yeah, probably a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely, dude.
Given the hindsight, yes. There.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much did art school impact your creativity or anything like that?
You know, it's funny. We talk about this.
Yeah, we did.
The way it impacted me is because when I was in Venezuela, we were preparing to face the monster, the Americans. You know, it's funny.
The American contemporary art monster.
Yeah, art monster. I'm like, well, we always had to put the American art over our heads, something unreachable. You gotta prepare for that world because you're still not better than them. You know, that's the idea. The idea is to self-deprecation. I'm not that good. I gotta do the best with as little as I can. And That's how it impacted me. It impacted me to a point that I developed a complete fallacy about American art. And this is not in an offensive way. I'm saying like beyond my own expectations. I went beyond what it was. I expected a monster. It's not a monster. It's beautiful. It's just different. It's something, and I'm not saying it's not good. I'm saying my personal expectations were much higher. That's what it was.
Yeah, well, when you have a professor telling you
that your work
basically
sucks.
Basically the same thing.
My work sucks. That's basically what happened. Yeah, your work sucks. And then when you turn around, he will tell somebody next to me, like, oh, he's actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how it impacted it. My teachers were really old. My training was classical training, so we needed to learn, you know, the theory of color, how to use it, you know, the chemistry of it, what is good to mix and what is not, the effects of it, the psychology of it, you know.
That's big.
Art history, oh man, you know, when I went to Italy, it was even, it was deeper than that, because then you will have to, like, see into the nobility of the material. Is the material gonna last long? Mm-hmm. You know, because there are artists out there right now, contemporary artists that are dead, and so is their work falling apart. You know, so you have to learn that.
Yeah. I mean, tempera paints made back in like the 15th century were egg yolks and pigment.
Yeah.
Temple. Probably doesn't it's called temple. Hold up temple. Very long.
Yeah, it doesn't. Look at the Last Supper. Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I went to Italy, they were restoring it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They just started restoring it.
That's probably a big project.
Yeah.
I've been reading one of Da Vinci's biographies lately, and it was talking about that. He started adopting the Dutch ways of using oil paints.
Yep.
And his master or teacher before him in the workshop was using tempera paints.
Yeah. Well, this that's a good thing about, you know, when you read the old masters. The old masters are like, you know, prior to Picasso. Picasso said, you know, good artists, you know, copy, and great artists steal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's exactly what Da Vinci did in that, and what you just mentioned. You gotta continue, you know, the legacy, expand that legacy and make it yours. You know, transform it. You're not gonna reinvent the wheel. You're just gonna make it better, like without having to reinvent it. You know, you know what I mean? So you take what has been discovered, and from that point, you start like using it to your own advantage, rather than like, oh, I'm gonna do it completely different from the get-go. No, you're gonna waste your time.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was crazy what he was into. He was basically trying to copy nature, essentially. No one knew anything about anatomy and dissections. He was robbing graves and figuring out which muscles connected to which ones.
He did.
Inventing all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, that's true.
And he was like a set designer for most of the time, pretty much. Wouldn't be called set design back but he was like employed by the Medici clan to entertain a lot of the time.
Well, if you read one of his letters, the last thing he mentioned is that he can paint.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He talks about everything he can do. The last one, he puts it as a side note. By the way, I can paint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't say it like that, but that's what he said.
That's pretty much what he said. He goes on for a couple pages about how he can
it's a Renaissance man.
Be an architect.
Yeah.
Designed siege weapons as good as anyone else.
Yeah. He was efficient. Efficient. He was a very efficient Renaissance man.
Mm-hmm.
He was an artist because of the way he thought, more than the way he painted.
Yeah.
That's the root of the whole tree right there.
Yeah, most of everything that he discovered was just from really looking at stuff.
Yeah.
And he would have in his notes written down things like, figure out why we sneeze. And like, what does this bone do? He's just constantly curious about all these seemingly random things.
Yeah.
But it accumulates into a bunch of indescribable stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's true.
But how did numbers
come into the picture?
Your artwork. Yeah, now I'm thinking about that.
Numbers are elements that they're signs. You know, every number has an angle. Numbers came from like the symbol. Number is a symbol. And you know, if you see the ancient numbers, they represent the amount of angles they exist within a digit. You know, like mm-hmm. number one has one angle, number two is like a letter Z, has two angles in it. Number three is three angles, number four is four angles in it. Like so basically there's more than the eye can see. You know, the meaning of it, we take it for granted because we see them every day. You know, the biggest secrets in life I hide in plain sight, like right in front of me. You know, people keep digging everywhere around the world to find so many different things. And the answer is right before your eyes. You know, numbers are symbols that represent so many things. I use for measurement, I use for communication, I use for, you know, everybody uses numbers. Everybody uses numbers to qualify, to like to measure emotion. Like everything is quantifiable almost, if you think about mm-hmm. it. And you know, the first things that we learn when we're kids, you know, is numbers. You know, you can remember when kids come to you and like, how old are you? 3. Or like this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
This old.
So it's like, I'm this old. And it's universal. It's universal. Out of this old planet, people probably, you know, any other beings out there, they need to have something that is metrics. Mm-hmm. You know, like the numbers, maybe they're called differently, but it will represent the same thing we have in here. Because we all always have that feeling of wanting to have a grasp, an understanding of how much of anything we have. You know, mm-hmm. our own syndrome of wanting to control things, you know. So numbers could be so many different things. And that's why they're there, because we will never live a life without them, you know.
Yeah.
They could mean so many things.
It is pretty much the universal language.
Yeah.
Even,
absolutely.
Do you know the golden record on the Voyager probe that they sent out?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. The way that they devised a means of communicating to anyone, anything that would find it, is by showing the measurement of how much an atom wiggles. Oh, no, the distance between like
the
hydrogen molecule.
That's called, I know we're getting out of the subject, but it's called,
that's fine.
It's an atomic clock.
Yeah.
The atomic clock, yeah, right. I know, check this out. That's gonna sound good now. No, I'm kidding. So, but it's an atomic clock, dude. The atomic clock, I just watched something about it. It's like they shoot a ray. Right? At a certain frequency. In a different frequency, the atom's distance in between them, it varies. And that's how accurate they come with a new digit within this, you know, the amount of numbers. So yeah, imagine that. Yeah. Time and space, numbers.
Yeah, I mean it makes sense.
It's kind of pretty constant. that's why I'm fascinated with it, because you know, you get to a point that you treat the numbers like if they people. You know, to me, number 5 is a female number because it reminds me of the pentacle, you know? Yeah. You know, number 7 is the famous lucky number, 7 days, you know? Number 12, number 11, master number, number 22, you know what I mean? Number 8, infinite, you know?
Yeah.
So
I was going to ask.
Fibonacci sequence. Come on. Oh, my God. We can talk all night about this.
I was going to ask your gallery, Art Space 8. Is that 8 or is that infinity?
It's both.
Yeah. I thought I was on to something.
That's why the 8 is tilted to a point that. Wait. Is it an 8 or an infinite?
Yeah. It's tilted just to like 45 degrees. Yeah.
Everything is cyclical, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So that's why.
Do you weave, like what you were talking about with the five representing a female number, do you weave that into your artwork to try and communicate with people?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Man, that's my thing. I mean, look, it's not that you want to do something that is, you know, to a point that nobody will understand, but you will be able to weed out that niche. You know, it's not that I'm trying to create a niche, but you weed out people that is not into that subject, so they will appreciate me more, like from a freedom point of view, but more, mm-hmm. more like a free point of view, where they can just flow with the colors and enjoy how something might look. But there's always an empirical approach to my spiritual narrative. You know what I mean? So yeah. There's a point that I believe where science and art could collide, clash, could merge, or could interweave. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, going back to Da Vinci, that's like exactly. they were both exactly. almost exactly the
and,
same.
And I think that's something that he should never be forgotten or put aside, because those are principles that, you know, that are very natural to my being, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how I grew up, pretty much.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
So what brought you to opening a gallery then? After all this, you went to New York, you were doing set design.
Yeah, so...
exploring numbers throughout all of
it. So I've been represented by several galleries in New York, and I was represented by two galleries here in Chicago. But I always saw the gallery business, the art business. It's an art itself. It is.
Mm.
So basically, you know, it's like a different ecosystem, amplified. Anything is relative. Let's talk like anything. Yeah.
It's
so
true.
Basically, you take this structure and the train of thought that you have as an artist and apply it to an art gallery. It's like, You say your hand is basically, you know, one of your tools to paint, right? And let's say your art gallery is something similar to it. Every artist represents a finger, you know? And and the way you move that hand, it will issue a statement. So every artist that comes in has to be somebody that is a main player in this whole orchestra. You know what I mean? So everyone have their own approach, but there should be a common thread. And that's, I believe that's how movements are created. You know what I mean? So it's not, that's what I saw. I've seen a lot of galleries opening and just thinking about the money and making money, which is okay. And it's pure money, finance, you know, and marketing, and that's it. And yeah, quality, of course. But I think we are at a point in our lives that people like substance, want something that goes beyond, something that provokes you, that you want, that gives you a reason to go beyond, a little more beyond of what you can understand and evolve with it. So that's what I'm trying to do with Art Space 8, you know?
Yeah, lots of curation behind the theme, all that.
Yeah.
And you don't wanna, like those galleries you're talking about that are just in it for the money, kind of miss part of the point, right? With having a specific curatorial vision that people are going to come to you for.
Well, it depends.
Depends.
So your question is like, let me get this straight. So
I'm saying that my intuition is that like a collector is gonna think, oh, we're decorating the guest room, or I just want a new piece of artwork, and I'm really feeling some of the stuff that I see at Art Space 8.
Okay.
And if they walk in and it's a completely different curatorial vision than before.
Of course.
They'd be thrown off.
Look, this, well, initially we want to connect with the people that think alike, right? So we can create synergy, so we can create empathy, that we can create and reciprocate towards our customers, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you get if you come here? What do you get if you buy art? What's the point of coming to Art Space 8? Well, you know, I'm unbiased, and yet mm-hmm. I draw that line of not decreasing or letting that line of that curve of excellence and execution decline, you know, go down. You know, there's people that is going to like what you do, and there's people that is not going to like what you do, but fortunately, I don't listen to the outside noise. And I base my, you know, the way I react towards my customers through what the facts are, what they are like. And what I notice is that people is grateful sometimes, well, most of the time, when they come to actually buy something that goes over the couch, and you say, you know, in the back of your head, you're like, oh my God, hold on. I mean, it's fine if you want to put something over the couch. But by the way, where are you from? Look, I'm going to show you everything I got, and I'm going to talk to you about that piece that you picked for the couch. So just so you know, that piece that you're going to be putting over the couch is not just a pretty painting.
Yeah.
You know? So let me download the value of that painting on you, so you can realize that you came to the right place, and maybe there's a meaning for you being here, mm-hmm. you know? And I have noticed people like completely flip and be like, oh my God, I wanna come over more, and I wanna know about this, and I wanna know about that. And that's exactly what I like about it, you know?
I can imagine.
I'm not turning away people like, oh my God, you cannot be a collector. No, maybe you can. Maybe you can understand. Maybe you can learn. Maybe I can change your perspective. Maybe I can show you the spectrum that exists, and you can explore it yourself and be like, oh, you know what? I didn't know there's better ways of connecting with art, seeing art, and mm-hmm. now that I'm going to purchase something, I understand it better. You know? Then you find the substance. When you wake up in the morning, walk into your living room, or you see the painting hanging, and you say, wow, this artwork puts me at an emotional level that I like. I can wake up every day and look at this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like going back to, this might be a long train of thought, but going back to the Picasso quote, good artist copy, great artist steal. Every piece of artwork that's created with intent is like placed inside of this timeline of history, and it's connected to all these different things, all these different artists, influences, and backgrounds. It's a story, really, when you start to dig into it, and it creates a lot of meaning for people when it's up on their walls or when they actually collect it and have a part of it that they like about it because it speaks to people.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It completely does. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I mean, everybody got their own clock, you know, and their clock, scientifically speaking, everybody perceives time differently at a certain point of their lives, you know. And, you know, I think that if you manage to get the attention from the audience, from somebody, to stand in front of a painting and be able to discover something, not about the painting, but about yourself, on how you're looking at that painting, that's exactly when you connect and say like, oh, wow, I really feel, you know, the relationship here. You know, I think that's one of the most important things. There's a lot of misunderstandings and misconcepts about like what art should be or what art is like. And that's why we do what we do in here, you know? And this is why I don't only curate the people that exhibit here, but I curate even the circle that is around me, you know? Because just to give you an idea, it is so good when you're talking quantum physics, when you're talking like I'm talking to you right now. And all of a sudden you turn around and somebody tells you like, do you want chicken salad? And you, oh my God, oh Jesus, get them away from here. I don't want to talk to them. So, like that. I'm like, okay, please ease me into the chicken salad because I'm here in another, you know, in another level where I want to be almost on a daily basis so I can grow. Mm-hmm. I can elaborate. I can create new things. You know what I mean? And that synergy that you have with your environment is great. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's moments like these long conversations when you start, or when I realize things about my own like reality and perceptions of things, and get to take a little bit from other people and go back into chicken sandwich land. with a whole different bit of perception to bring along with it.
How do you say that?
Chicken sandwich land.
Oh my God.
It's true. I'll call it the black and white of everyday existence.
No, you need those moments. Believe me. I like to like get hammered and get drunk and be like, forget it. Art sucks. Who wants to paint? Fuck that. But you know at that point, like when you're doing that, is that you're just breaking away from it. You know, I need to talk bass down on earth. And then, okay, I'm out. Again, you know what I mean? Kind of.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That was my whole childhood, is just trying to not be on earth, put on a new CD or something that I haven't heard yet, and just like lay on the floor and totally absorb myself into the experience and see what's there.
Yeah.
And explore these different
states
of like consciousness or whatever you want to call it.
It's funny you say that. You know what you're triggering in here talking to me about this.
I don't know what I'm triggering.
Oh my God, you have no idea. You have no idea. So remember when I told you what you learned first, discipline or freedom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, the order of the elements in this equation when it comes to creativity, it does alter the product, the outcome. It does, you know, because you're saying, I like to immerse myself and go deep and all that. I love that too. I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, let's keep it positive. I know. But you know exactly what I'm headed to, I think. You know, we have art and we have intellectual art, sophisticated art. Art that has grown, that has been elaborated, that has been studied for years. Okay. You know, the art is in the doing. And then that quality of execution, of excellence, when it becomes instinct, because you have learned through discipline, then you're free to really do whatever the fuck you want for real.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have acquired the skills through discipline. And that's when you really feel, because you don't feel you have to hide through the excuse of freedom to justify the mistakes you make for the lack of knowledge when it comes to technique in elaboration. You understand?
Yeah. When you look at it from a music perspective, you got to practice the performance.
Harmony.
Yeah, the performance isn't the only time you're playing.
Exactly.
In fact, it should be the one time that you're playing the least, thinking about it the least, because you've practiced it so exactly. much. And even if you're painting on canvas, the same sort of theory applies.
Yeah.
And that's that's what I've noticed about my artwork.
You have to.
I can't do what I want to do yet. So beautiful. I'm hitting the books.
You know what? I'm going to switch this towards you now. It's okay. good that you said that, because now you're going to have to suffer a lot. And that's mm-hmm. actually the fear many people that want to be artists are. You know, the best thing you can do is to face the truth if you don't know how to paint or how to sculpt or how to be an artist. Because that frustration is going to be your drive that is going to make you succeed, because you're going to look for the path, the right path to get to knowledge. To get to wisdom,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what it is about. Like, to a point that you said, you know what? I set my standards up here, and holy crap, I can't reach. But no, you have a very humble approach. There's some people that will do, and excuse me, people out there, that they paint like shit, and they tell you, I'm an artist. And people will say, oh my God, you're so talented. People that don't know shit about art. Mm-hmm. And let me be an asshole here, but it's the truth. And then you are immersed into a bunch of compliments that are completely irrelevant and not even objective.
Yeah.
About what your real intention was. And then you are at a place of being, you know, comfortable with having compliments on something that looks like a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. You see gotta watch out for the well-wishers. I've always appreciated man. People in my life that'll call me out or be like,
I had them. I remember, look, I tell you a story. There was this artist in Venezuela named Juan Loyola. He passed away. Mm-hmm. I will never forget. I when he says, you look at what you painted, so nice. He's like, look at this canvas. Oh, how cute, you put a face in it, a portrait on a corner, so that way I can approve that you know how to paint. I was feeling like a little shit. I'm like, he caught me. It was a painting that, you know, because it's very easy to say I know about art because I go and I paint, and because I go and I select a portrait, or because you see a landscape, or because you see something that is very well executed and is figurative. But how do you do mm-hmm. when somebody asks you, when you see a work like from Lucio Fontana and you don't know anything about art, or you see Baselitz, or you see, you know, who could I say, Frank Stella, and then you, if you really don't know, you really don't know what you're looking at, right? And you're like, oh, shit, how do I look at this? Where do I even start? How? You know, that's mm-hmm. exactly, you know, that's exactly when you're like, okay, let me see. Give me the list with the bullet points, you know? Because art is a different type of animal, man. It's not just pretty. No.
Well, and even you can talk about the skill, the craftsmanship of a painting, and then you can talk about why that imagery could have a psychological hint to what the thought was behind creating it, and taking like a psychoanalytic approach to why does this guy always paint scantily clad men and fully clothed women or something like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look.
There's a whole lot of different sides to it as well.
Absolutely. Oh, man, you got to see the artist honesty. The things that you are part of it, that change your psyche, that change your feelings, that alter your emotions, you know? And it's not because you're being, you don't... We're not talking empathy here, okay? We're not talking empathy on you like, oh, I feel sorry for them. I feel happy for them. This that happened over there. I want to paint about it. No, no. There are things that you just don't touch because you have absolutely nothing to do in there. And those are things that are you know, not part of your entity as a human being, not part of your essence. And, you know, I believe in people, in that relationship that exists, that cycle of energy floating back and forth between you as an artist and the subject that you pick. What is it? Why? What compels you to do that? That's when I see honesty. To when you demonstrate to me or to the world that you're doing something not purely out of being skillful, but because you want to be a communicator, right? Mm-hmm. So you get to see, for example, things that you leave in your life that you put on your work in order for you to communicate a certain time in your life that you were into, or that you have, that you have been involved, that you might have been a witness, something that changed something in you. So basically, you have to be a communicator. And mm-hmm. and that's exactly when you're like, okay, why did you do this? Why, you know, when that relationship between you and creativity becomes instinct and you let all the things go and you really want to take things that are deeply rooted in you, that's when change, I believe, in my personal experience, that I believe that's when you start changing. That's when you start evolving, when you start creating and looking introspectively much more, you know, rather than seeing outside the outside noise and see like, oh, wait, let me paint superheroes and cartoon characters and, you know, pour epoxy resin on top of it, make it highly gloss and go to Miami and sell them in Art Basel. Yeah. You know, how many of those there are? You know, let's not even go there.
Well, then here's a question. With what you're talking about, pondering why you're painting a subject, what that connection is that something you do consciously before starting an artwork, or is that a retrospective look that you have on it?
The process has completely evolved because I'm classically trained. I know the skeletal structure, mm-hmm. muscle, body, bone structure. You know, I could draw like an architect. No bullshit. And I could do perspective with my eyes closed, right? But it's not that I want to use the perspective and the drawing like with perspective to show the world what perspective is. But I look into perspective and I say, wow, how fascinating that there's rules that govern our surroundings and we don't see them if we don't want to, but they're still mm-hmm. there. It's called harmony. So I don't see perspective now as a tool. I see that tool, you know, that discipline of creating things with perspective as a way of using it completely different and bring it into my personal life and mm-hmm. say, oh, wait, there's a horizon, you know, there's escape points. And oh, this is how they interact. They're actually similar to real life, to what we do in life, you know? So it all started with me technically when I was younger, but as you get older, you start slowing down, but looking deeper into things, taking your time longer. And you start slowing down, even though your production could grow and be even faster and bigger. But you start slowing down and you start looking and you start getting fascinated and finding your own muse through the surroundings. I'm like, look, perspective, look, architecture, look, mm-hmm. color. And then you start digging science. Oh, wow. No wonder why. You know what I mean? It's like when people say, yeah, you're red is passion. Yeah, of course it's passion. It's heat. And it's always relative. It's related in there. So, oh, by the way, red is the color that vibrates the most.
Mm-hmm.
At the furthest. Right? And then you started getting attracted to all these things. And then you're like, you know what? This is almost like applied science.
A little bit.
So the beauty of it is like you're surrounded by so much that you can grasp and say like, oh, wow. Is art really science instead? Now that's, mm-hmm, that brings you to a point that you say, well, you know, state of the art means that it's top notch and it's used as a technical, you know, nomenclature.
Yeah.
Or nomenclature? How do you say it?
I think it's nomenclature.
Nomenclature, yes.
A term, yeah.
So, yeah. So if you think about it, I'm like, oh, wow. So basically that when at this age, you start looking back and you start saying like, you know what? Life is simple. It's just based. It's right here. Everything. We got it right here. And you can, mm-hmm, use that to your advantage. You can use that and you can immerse yourself in your own life and be entertained forever until you freaking die.
Yeah.
Yes.
No doubt about that.
Yes. You know, and what else can I tell you?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? Well, you mentioned silence and it's like I've been doing some meditating off and on. I'm not very good at it. But every once in a while, when you get those moments of meditating for like 15, 30 minutes, that's when you really realize that silence isn't nothing. You can, mentally, it just opens up after a little while.
Absolutely.
And it's like, wow.
Silence is like the night.
Yeah.
It's like darkness. Silence is just the absence of sound. Mm-hmm. And so is darkness. It's the absence of light. I mean, the universe has a sound. Sound always existed. I mean, the first sound in the universe is supposed to be Om, right? But,
mm-hmm,
but you know, if we're getting all philosophical, you know, like if you think about it, you know, sound will get you, you know, like in silence, you'll be able to generate. You know, I think in silence is when your brain probably will be like, oh, okay, what's going on? There's no sound here. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start generating and start thinking.
Well, and yeah. I think the neurological aspect of that, mm-hmm, is once you shut down one of your senses, the other ones start to become more acute.
Yeah.
So if you close your eyes, then you'll have more brain power focused on listening.
Yeah.
Or if you put headphones, earplugs in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe your vision will be more acute. Oh, you'll be more focused on it.
Oh, man, if I told you. Look, I mean, call me freak, whatever. Like when I shower, I'm going to tell you this. You're probably going to have a kick out of this. I don't know if it is normal. I guess it is. And I opened it, you know, I'm showering. And I, you know, the drain, I cover it. And I let the water run. And you let the water go like, you right? If you pay attention to it for a little bit of time, you'll hear a different frequency with the water at the waterfalls. If you stay for a little bit, you'll hear something else.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I've never tried that.
Mm-hmm. I have. It's like if the water talks to you. It's funny, but like,
yeah.
Yeah, so you can sharpen your ear, you can sharpen your eye, you can sharpen the way you perceive sound or the way you perceive light or the way you perceive many things. You know, we were just talking about how you hack your brain to be able, mm-hmm, to be more effective when it comes to memory. We just spoke about it. Sound is the same.
Yeah.
You're like, wait. Just stay a little bit and like, you know, yeah.
All right. Well, to loop it back to the artwork and throw that one in there, how, like, when it comes to learning about senses and perception, all that sort of stuff, how has it influenced your artwork lately at all, yeah, if at all?
Yeah.
So I'm sure it has.
So I like always to be part of the equation because I live what I paint, meaning like I'm in it. And I'm like, what better than testing everything on yourself? Not that I'm testing anything on myself, but I'm like, we in this universe and we in this planet and you meet people. So basically, as we said before, relationship with people, people that are close to you, you know, the synergy that exists. There's so many ways that humans interact with each other and they get to affect each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what is fascinating is that we have the power to make each other's lives better or worse. So this is how it affects. I'm very aware every day when I interact with people, when things that I do, I'm always on the search to a point that it drives me a little bit fucking crazy because you always have such a high standard and such big and high expectations on of things being sometimes more than they are.
You know?
Seeing what's beyond that. You know, what is like just to put it this way, you meet a girl and then you saying like, what can be more beautiful than looking at her?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to still look at her. What is it behind her or within her that is going to make me look at her completely different?
There's a lot of things.
And discover, no, I know, but not physical. You know, so here we're talking about, now let's go into something else. Neurolinguistic programming. How is she going to talk? What is she going to talk about? How am I going to feel when she talks?
Mm-hmm.
How is she going to feel when I talk? How is she gonna react? Would you know? So there's like, when you're doing this, it's like if you feel you got like the metrics running after you, like ding 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 ding. This is okay, but that happens with everything. In my personal experience, with people, with exercises, with searching for a new subject. So basically, I try to go introspectively. But I try not to have just, as I told you, just paint freely and do something that looks nice and beautiful and look for for a title to it. No.
Yeah.
No. I have a very deep connection with my work. I got to a point that I don't feel like I just want to. Sometimes I've done paintings that I literally love them when I look at them. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And I stand in front of them and I'm like, oh my God, it's beautiful. I love the color. I love this. I love that. And I cover them.
Cover them up?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, that's hard to do.
I know, but I do. But
why is that?
Because it's not me. This is why you have to suffer your work. It's not, to me, the integrity comes into, let's not be just a fucking painter that is going to paint a bunch of paintings that they look beautiful, they're going to do a bunch of pieces, and that's it, I'm an artist, I'm going to go and exhibit in a gallery. No. If this shit does not connect with me, and it's not me, and it's not deeply rooted in my essence, it's not hitting the wall. It's not going to be hanged.
So that connection is something else than just loving it.
100%.
Huh.
100%. Otherwise, I would not put the effort I put. I'm deeply rooted. It's deeply rooted in me. And the relationship is extremely tight. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If you tell me that I'm going to be broke for the rest of my years, and I will never have a deep relationship with anybody, and I will not die alone on the bridge, let me tell you what I will say. Yes, that's good. Where do I sign? I still do this. But fortunately, that stigma of art, everybody's broke. No. You know, if you really have something deep rooted in you, that's a sign right there that you have to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
Work on it. Make it bigger. Expand it. Make it flow. Make it grow like a virus. You know? The feeling of wanting to communicate and create and be perceived different in order to convey a message that will be rooted in you. When it comes from me, it has to be substantial. Mm-hmm. And the only way I could do that is the way I'm telling you. You know, it's a delicate matter. We're talking about people's hearts, people's intention, people's emotions, the feeling of it, and the science of it, because it is in there, you know? So yeah. That's why I have to be like that, because I take my work serious, very serious. And yeah, it is a pretty painting, but I'm going to cover that shit because that is not me. If you're looking at it, it's pretty. Yeah, do I want to sell it? Yeah, fuck yeah. But no, you know what? Get it out. I'm going to keep working on it because it's still too pretty. It's too pretty, aesthetically pleasing. Yeah, whatever. But it's still not unique enough to convey the message the way I want to send it. Mm-hmm. You know? So even though I'm not completely representational, I care very much about the way the message is delivered.
Yeah. So then what's the point at which you know something's done?
This I can answer with a cliche.
Go for it.
You don't finish paintings. You abandon them. It's true. Because you can always find a way to keep painting, to keep doing the same piece, to over-elaborate it and still make it look beautiful. I think it's a combination for you to finish a piece. If you're working freely and you don't have a deadline and you're just working, I think that you'll be able. I think that you need to have a clear view, even though it never goes that way. You need to have a clear view. There's a clear view of what length that ray of light you're working with, meaning the path that you have. In my case, it's like, okay, how long do you think I'm gonna live? I don't know. Well, So how long do you think I need to work for? I don't know. But okay, can you estimate? Yeah, I can kind of like wing it. So now, it's a feeling of like, did I spend enough time in my case to create something that is compelling, that I can send a message, and that I can create several other pieces that will be part of this narrative? You know? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you want to be 20 years in a collection of 20 paintings? Do you want to be a year in a collection of 20 paintings? Or do you want to do 20 paintings in 2 months? It all depends, you know? How clear, how complicated, how many elements you want to develop to put in there. So It's, in that case, it's subjective, but it's objective at the same time, because objectively you have to look at, okay, how long am I going to be painting in my lifetime? You know, you might paint the Mona Lisa today and then tomorrow you're dead.
Yeah.
You're not going to go anywhere. So you have to think about the purpose, your goal, you know? And as you develop that and you walk through that path, it will change. It will never be the same way exactly how you thought from the beginning.
No, yeah.
Because you have to leave a gap for creativity. That's what creativity is. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's like the only thing you can ever expect is the unexpected.
Yeah, of course.
The only constant is change. All of those.
Yeah, the only constant is change. I like my change to be seamless.
True. Yeah.
You know, evolution is, in my case, is seamless, because I can squeeze the sponge as much as I can every time I squeeze for new juice. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. You know?
Well, you're lucky if all your changes are seamless.
No, I want them to be seamless. Oh, okay. I try for them to be seamless. The process might not be seamless, but the outcome is seamless. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't had very many seamless changes yet.
Oh, no. Look, one painting might come out very nice on the first try in a week, right? 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, the next one will take me 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it comes as the first one, a little different, you know, it's a continuation, the whole story. And you're like, holy crap, I just suffered so much on that piece because my method changed. There was a change. But I still have to be like a magician. to make the whole change all along the collection to seem seamlessly done.
Maybe
one painting got more scars than others, more layers, because I didn't reach. I couldn't reach, because on everyone, you always going a step higher. That's the benefit of selling your work. When you see your most precious pieces out, you say, holy shit, I need to do one better.
Yep.
So I can cover the pain that I don't have that piece anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was one of the first pieces of advice I got from someone who wasn't even an artist. His sister is, she works with clay, ceramics.
Yeah.
And I told him I was doing art. We hadn't seen each other in like 5 or 6 years. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah, sell your work. I'm like, okay, that sounds pretty nice. Mm-hmm. He's like, for real though, my sister, when she has all her shelves filled with all the nice ceramics that she's done, doesn't do anything. She doesn't create anything new. But then she sells them all, and it's a completely different phase, completely different chapter, a theme that she's exploring.
Yeah.
And it just completely revitalizes the whole thing.
Nice.
So then do you go off of like bodies of work? Can you break your art into different sections like that? Or has it been on a whole continuum?
I do. As I evolve with my work, I keep on the constant search all the time. Mm-hmm. You have to be. It's imperative. You have to. If you just create and create and create without the need of discovery, then what the fuck are you creating? Mm. You're defeating the purpose. Because it's creativity. It's creating. It's something that hasn't been done. Imagine, like, we're digging right now into the depth of like the creative process.
Oh yeah, because that's what I like.
Yeah, I mean, you can paint and find a formula that you are able to paint, you know, big amounts, but they're all repetitive. And then that's it, you're making money. I'm not gonna be talking about any other artist, but you know, you can keep creating a brand, create a subject, and keep doing it over and over and over. And in 5 years, 6 years, I mean, you put a new medium and you do it with a different medium. Here's another. Now I'm going to do the same thing. There's a fine line between evolution, being cohesive, and repetitive. You know, repetitive is you not on the search for discovery and finding at the next level where you want to be. And then there's being creative, you know, I mean, being repetitive and just doing over and over and over and not getting out of that vicious circle, you know? So it's like the guy from Apple, Steve Jobs said, keep yourself hungry. You got to be hungry. In the arts, you have to be hungry. And then you have to know technique and then go a little higher. But hold on, what about if I did this with this material? So I do take my, I keep working, I'm evolving with what I do, but I do take a detour temporarily to meet and explore different techniques, different mediums, different materials, different surface, different approaches, and take what I like and then bring them into my present collection and be like, okay, now I'm gonna fuse this with this. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Because this is a new thing, but it comes at the right time. You know, it comes at the right moment. You know, this is when you know if you could really be an artist. A lot of people say, I'm bored, I just stopped painting what I was doing and I totally changed. You weren't bored, you just couldn't reach. Mm. And since you couldn't reach, you went another route.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You will never be bored. In the arts, if you are an artist, there's no way in hell that you are bored if you are disciplined, because you're always on the search for better. Better. Just put it this way. Let's say we're fighters, MMA fighters.
Unlucky for me.
I beat every single fighter every day. And they all fight the same way. Let's put it that way. Compared to the arts. I fight every day and nobody beats me. And I beat them easily by being creative. Yeah? What happened when I get beat?
Your ego plummets.
No shit.
Number one. you realize you...
Bruce Lee, dude, happened. Bruce Lee happened that way. Bruce Lee, of course. San Francisco, he became... Oh, there was a famous fight that happened. And what happened? He invented Jeet Kune Do.
Okay.
He needed that change. Because he needed to break through. That's exactly what happened. When you are bored, stay there. Stay there. Think about it. Look at it and be like, wait, why am I bored? Oh, because nothing is coming out. Don't be a coward. Stay there, motherfucker, because you need to face this. That's how you grow. You know? It's true.
Yeah, I can't deny that, being stuck on a painting right now.
Yeah, so I do enjoy. Yeah, I do go out of my route and out of my path, and I use new materials and I incorporate and I create a small, shorter collection that comes along with all my paintings. Mm-hmm. But you can tell that there's synergy in between because I use, you know, I purposely put discipline into it. I've been doing it for years, you know.
Yeah.
So I do have that secret compartment, you know, in my Pandora box that I go to every time. I might feel that I'm bored, but I'm not. I'm not. I'm tired.
So I'm do you go back to something that's like tried and true? You've done it. You know it well.
If I feel bored, I'm not bored. I'm not bored. I'm tired right now. Do I need to take a break? Yes. Go back to the subject. That's what happened.
I was going to ask, is there any technique, any material that stands out to you as like your favorite? Could you name one?
Come on, man.
I was just
thinking. Is that a serious question? What do I paint with? This oil.
Yeah?
Of course. Most of my work is oil, so it's obviously that's my favorite. Yeah, I work with oils, oil on canvas. I work with pigment, dry pigment. I work on paper. I work on wood. I like working on wood panels. I like working with plaster. I like working with epoxy resin. I like working with sandpapers and machines, and you know, I'm always looking for something new that can help me be more efficient. You know, you have to be an efficient artist.
Yeah, I was kind of regretting that question as I said it. What I was hoping for is like some sort of, yeah, I love it to just throw 1 ounce of gasoline on the canvas and light it on fire. It's just a perfect texture.
I've worked with fire. I work with a torch. I have it.
Yeah.
But, you know, every time I'm working, I'm thinking, I mean, how long is this going to last? I'm making a piece. It might be experimental. I'm thinking always nobility. How long is it going to last? Is it going to fall apart in a couple of years? Or is it, you know, I care about legacy, you know? I care that my work will talk when I'm not here.
Oh, yeah. Everyone does.
Yeah.
Like, really, when you boil it down to why we do anything, most of us are trying to find some little piece of immortality or have something that lasts longer.
Yeah, that you can make your dent on the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why Da Vinci is so fascinating. And not really, because he wasn't known in his time. So he never really published anything. But he was 300 years at least ahead of a lot of different things.
Dude, he was known
at
his time.
Yeah, in anatomy or fluid dynamics.
At his time, he was known.
Yeah, even before Newton,
he wasn't immortal like today, but he was known.
He was known.
You know,
yeah.
Do you know what it is to have the Medici's backing you up?
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Come on. Yeah, he was known.
But I guess what I'm getting at is his work was rediscovered.
Of course.
Like when Newton thought about gravity, and his laws of thermodynamics or whatever was.
Yeah.
He didn't know Da Vinci. He didn't know Da Vinci already beat him to it.
Yeah, of course. But you know what's so funny? I know this is heresy when I'm going to say this. Da Vinci was just a curious, disciplined artist that suffered his work, kept himself hungry, and developed that inquisitive mind not to stop. And he acquired the knowledge. I'm not going to go into depth because I'm into the same thing, and that saying it in public, it will be different. But he belonged to a society, let's put it that way, where knowledge is the common thread, wisdom is the common thread, where you learn, you know, psychology, rhetoric, mathematics, physics, you know, and music. I wonder how come he was that talented, you know? He was a Renaissance man because he immersed himself in those fields where he could actually find a common ground among them and expose them. That's basically what he was.
I mean, by no means, he wasn't God. He wasn't...
He act like
that supernatural. But that's what everyone's searching for. They want that work to outlive them and then people to rediscover it or always know about it and have their minds
funny
blown.
Funny thing is that his legacy is not that big. In paintings.
Yeah, in paintings, really not.
They're not.
Reading his biography, it's 90% like inventions and discoveries and that curiosity that you're talking about. He was constantly looking for the next thing and why
somebody not into details but somebody actually tried to ruin his reputation. They did
back when he was around.
Yeah,
I know something like that happened early on.
It happens to every good one.
Yeah,
all the time. It's the laws of success. It's like that. Think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Gagosian has been to court hundreds of times. Mary Boone ended up in jail for 30 months for tax evasion. And, you know, artists that are not accepted in galleries, they said, gallery owners are thieves, are crooks, are this, are that. And in the arts, it's like that. It's a competitive world, whether you believe it or not. And, you know... And it's a very difficult world to succeed and a difficult world to emerge from. And the funny part is that you acquire more tools when you have nothing. Self-deprecated artists are the ones that actually succeeded and broke through more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Think about it. So Da Vinci, that's what happened, you know? It happens to every single one of them. You name a successful artist, I will tell you something. Picasso, an asshole with women. What a motherfucker. Every single one of them.
Well, as they're saying these days, haters gonna hate.
Yeah, haters gonna hate. Exactly. Tell me about it. Have a book about that in my life.
Well, and really everyone's on both sides of that at any point in time. I know I've been there.
Yeah.
And it's like, that bastard is like doesn't deserve it. But, you know, being cynical like that and envious really is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's just toxic.
It is very toxic.
And it affects everything. It affects your creativity, first of all.
I don't even pay attention. I do, but I'm like, you know what? When your close friends, your circle of friends are close to you and your family is close to you and they get to know you and they know you, why would you care for anything else?
Well, you want to listen to people to an extent with a filter on it. Yeah. If someone's got credible, like, what's the word? It starts with a C. Criticism.
Yes.
Credible criticism. Yes. You don't want to ignore that.
Of course not. Yeah, but that's exactly when it comes to your previous experience. That's when you look at where the critic comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Who is criticizing? Who are you? And I'm not going to say, what are your credentials? No, but
yeah,
who are you? How old are you? What do you do for a living? Where are you coming from? How come your eyes are so sharp? How can you tell me this is good or bad? What are the principles? Where do you base your judgment on in order for you to tell me this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the art business, a lot of people is familiar with the abuse that critics, you know, will make you feel abused. But it's not. You know, the greatest freaking, the most talented people that I have ever met, they all went through freaking abuse and they all, you know, got taken down like, this is shit. It's rigorous. It's really hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
I have somebody coming from an orchestra here, and I told him, how old are you? I told you about it, 26. Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. He's like, Fidel, you have no idea what I went through. Oh, I do, believe me.
Chairs getting thrown.
Yeah.
Drumsticks across the room.
Did you watch the movie?
I saw the first 30 minutes of
shit.
It. Yeah, I haven't finished it, but I was watching it last night. It's good.
Yeah.
But I've seen that in my middle school. There was a band teacher. He'd throw some fucking chairs at 12-year-olds.
Yeah, tell people when it's crazy. Them, like, look, you better grow some thick skin if you want my critic. If you want to be around me, like you want to see what I do, you want to join me, you want to be part of it. I'm very open to everybody. I'm mm-hmm. very, very open. I like people that is inquisitive, people that ask questions, people that want to know, how does this work? I like curious people. You have to be curious. But then there's people that get sensitive about, you know, the more you love what you do, the more protective of that discipline you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't argue that.
You know what I mean? I don't feel like going and talking to a neuroscientist, right? And tell him, listen, I'm a neuroscientist. Why? Oh, because I studied the brain too. No. he was dedicated. He went into that freaking university and went through studies just to learn in depth, right? But everybody called themselves artists. How do you mm-hmm. think we feel? You know?
It varies.
Yeah, it varies. But, you know, it all depends of where are you on that ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on where you are, is your vision. What's your perspective? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, time will tell. Exactly. Frankly, I don't really mind.
Brilliant that you said that. Time will tell.
I don't really mind people running around and saying they're this or they're that because you give it enough time and it'll pan out.
No, I mind them running around me. You can go around the world saying it, but please don't do it around me. That's the difference. I want to be a hermit at that moment. I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm totally joking.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but yeah, I try to isolate myself because I'm very passionate about what I do. And your subconscious mind is something you cannot control.
I go through periods of that too.
It's my instinct, man. I mean, please don't touch a subject with me unless, like, it's something that I cannot control. I don't know if that's a defect. I don't know what it is. But, I mean, my whole life has been this. So mm-hmm. that's why I'm very, like, instead of, like, criticizing now, I try to isolate myself from it and not pay attention, not look at it. That's it. Much better.